Getting back to our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
Hello, and welcome to an episode of We the People. Because here we want to emphasize and focus on the issues that are really important to we the people, the vast majority of us whose voices were heard in the election time, but want to continue to be heard. And for those of you like me, I watched Monday night's State of the Union address by Donald Trump, and I was embarrassed. Embarrassed by those that call themselves leaders and the way that they comported themselves. I remember a time when being in Congress, you still showed respect for the office of the president. You still showed respect to others. But I will say, based on the absolute disrespect that the Democrats showed, there is a dilemma in the Democratic leadership party, and it's responding to Trump's resurgence. The Democrats' rage against Trump and his machine, will they ever learn? Trump is beating them at the game because he's doing the 80-20 rule. He's focusing on the issues that 80% of the population stated was important to them. But yet the Democrats keep holding tight to this supremely left, progressive, very minority-minded issues. And let's face it, the Democrats are showing how to lose ugly. Overcome by President Donald Trump's red wave, when you have 89 counties going red, losing all seven of the swing states, the Democratic Party isn't just drifting, it's drowning in rage and envy. Whether during Trump's address to Congress on Tuesday or on key pieces of policies that most Americans favor, Democrats are acting petty, petulant, and uber progressive. They're out of step with what most Americans and even many of their own constituents. A CBS News poll showed a whopping 76% of people who watched his address approved of what Trump had to say. Though a majority of the viewers were Republicans, the Republicans, remember, are only 28% of registered voters. Fox News alone had over 10 million viewers. CNN had over 3 million. MSNBC was 1.2 or 1.5. During the speech, Democrats refused to applaud anything Trump said, and he was having fun with it, pointing it out, even on the most common sense solutions. And what was so disheartening was even in the heartwarming gestures, Trump honored invited guests who represented real-world tragedies and his policy solutions, and Democrats sat there sullen and angry. Donald Trump honored a 13-year-old brain cancer survivor, DJ Daniel, whose dream is to become a police officer and who has heroically overcome 16 surgeries. He was there beaming, and Donald Trump honored him by making him an honorary Secret Service member. And when DJ hugged the head of the Secret Service, tears, chills, emotion welling up in the vast majority of us watching. But yet, all the Democrats but one sat there, arms crossed, no emotion, no applause. To quote Senator Eric Schmidt, I think the Democrats really embarrassed themselves. I mean, they wouldn't even stand up for DJ, who survived cancer. I mean, it's childish, and it is. It is childish. Even Senator John Fetterman, Democrat of Pennsylvania, also broke his silence in social media post ripping his fellow Democrats on Wednesday afternoon. Quote, a sad cavalcade of self-owns and unhinged petulance. It only makes Trump look more presidential and restrained. We're becoming the metaphorical car alarms that nobody pays attention to, and it may not be the winning message. And it couldn't be more true. And the Democrats are continuing to struggle to respond to Trump. Again, Trump is hitting them left and right. The barrage of executive orders that are continuously going out until he can get things done in Congress. On top of that, that 80-20 rule is just, he is like there and he's just jabbing and punching and punching and jabbing. And the Democrats are doing what? Showing their indignation. President Trump gives fresh reasons for Democrats to rue their election loss in 2024. The failures of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris mean that everything they profess to care about, the transatlantic alliance, the state's capacity to improve society, the rule of law, is completely unwound. Democrats spent years declaiming that a second Trump presidency would be catastrophic, an existential threat to American democracy, yet they do not want to acknowledge or honor more Americans preferred Trump to the alternative that the Democratic Party set before them. And understanding how it all went so wrong would seem to be a proper priority for the Democratic leadership. Well, not so much, apparently. By watching the succession proceedings at the Democratic National Committee just a few weeks ago, it did not inspire much confidence. Ken Martin took the reins of the party apparatus by demonstrating the continuing incapacity for introspection as to why they lost. People want to say it was only 1.5%. It was a mandate. They lost. But yet, Mr. Martin continues to say, anyone saying we need to start over with a new message is wrong. We got the right message. By whose standard? When you stand and look in the mirror and profess to say this is the correct message, then yes, all you're going to get is mirroring back. But when you take away the blinders and look at the totality of the United States and those that went to vote, your message is not landing. It is not in congruence with what we the people want. Others in the Democratic Party think that it runs much deeper. Anyone who just says the message is fine, we just didn't get it out there, is very naive about the problem, says Seth Moulton, a Democratic congressman from Massachusetts. It's just an excuse for doing nothing and maintaining the status quo. Basically an excuse like, oh, it's okay. We got it. This is right. It's all right. Well, then get used to losing more. And the Republican Party is wanting to pounce on this. They're ready to pounce on this, especially with the midterm elections coming upon us. I know, we just got over one election. How can you be talking about another election? Well, put on your bootstraps, folks. We're about to get into a new election cycle. So the increasing educational polarization has realigned American politics, and it's not in the Democrats' favor. And maybe, just maybe, since that fateful day in Butler County, maybe common sense will be coming back into the realm. But one thing is to decry that Doge and Elon Musk is he's not elected, he's not effective. That's why you have appointed cabinet members. The people want accountability. The people want our dollars to be used in a more effective manner. We cannot continue to be a bank clothed as a country for the rest of the world while we are continuing to falter into bankruptcy. Continuing Compounding these challenges is the party's preoccupation with Trump's polarizing persona, which has at times diverted attention from sensitive policy debates. But how about this? Rather than just saying, this is the line, I'm a Democrat, I will never vote for a Republican, even when it a Republican idea or policy, even though it is in the best interest of the United States of America, it's in the best interest for the citizens of the United States of America, it's actually what 70% of the people want. I don't know. Maybe do your job. Your job is not to be pissed off all the time. Your job is not to be, oh, anti-Trump, I hate Trump, or be, you know, I'm not going to validate him as a president. He's the president. Respect it. We had to respect Biden as a president, even though we don't have a clue what was going on for 2 years, whether he was capacitated to even be president. But you know what? You've had a poll. You had an election. You lost resoundingly in that election. And here's something for the Republicans. Don't think that you can just go ramshod and put in all of this hugely right-wing issues. Use the common sense that the people are hoping that you have. Utilize the common sense to ring in and bring in a balanced budget like Trump has said he wants to do. You know when the last time we had a balanced budget was, folks? President Bill Clinton. Democrat. President Bill Clinton. And he was great. Set aside his sexual proclivities. He was great. He balanced the budget. And you know what he also did during his presidency? He shrunk the government workforce in order to get spending under control, in order to create a surplus to pay down our deficit, which is nowhere near what it is today. It was probably a sixth of what it is today. Remember, we're at $36 trillion, T-R-I-L-L-I-O-N, trillion dollar deficit. Soon, the taxes that are being collected will not even pay the interest on that. And then where are we? So bring back common sense to your governance. Bring back the fact that you do call, you are hired, you are beholden to the people of the United States, and you are supposed to be doing what's in the best interest of the United States and not lining the pockets of lobbyists or other interests or your own. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll talk about what happened in the Senate and their failure to protect girls' sports.
Getting back to our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
The debate over transgender participation in women's sports. Highly disappointed. History. Title IX was enacted in 1973. That was to not only protect and grant that women should have the right to scholarships and to sporting events, but also for equal access to enrollment in colleges. 1973. And I'm going to talk to the Gen Zs and some millennials. That was only 52 years ago. That women were given equal access to university and given the right to have our own sports. Why am I starting this segment off with this? Because the Senate Democrats blocked the GOP, hypocritically wearing pink, the women wearing pink in solidarity of women's rights. But no! What women's rights? All they've been doing is trying to destroy every aspect of we, the women, biological women, have to equal access to university, to equal access to safe and productive sporting events so that we can have our teams. But no, the Senate Democrats blocked the GOP-led bill to ban transgender athletes from women's sports. They voted unanimously unanimously. We only needed 60 senators, seven Democratic senators to go along and allow the vote. It wasn't even voting on the actual bill. It was allowing it to go on the floor. They filibustered it and killed it. These are your Democratic leaders that are supposed to be preserving your rights, women. Wake up. This is not the party protecting our rights. They are destroying everything that they can to impede women's rights. We are being erased. And by the way, this is a losing proposition. This is a losing position for the Democrats. And yes, I am angry about it because I don't know where the feminists are from the 70s. I wasn't part of that movement. I know some people who were because I was way, you know, not around in that time. But yet, hey, do some history. Open it up. Don't just rely on ChatGPT. Open up some history books. Google it. The outcome means the legislation, which passed the House in January with some Democrats voting in favor of it, mirrors an executive order issued by Donald Trump when he was surrounded famously by all those young athletes, those girl athletes. It won't go any further. The failed vote is likely to become a political talking point, and honestly, it should be for the midterm elections. A New York Times poll conducted in January found broad opposition to transgender athletes in asking respondents whether transgender female athletes, which are basically men, they're male. They may be identifying as female. They are male. They have gone through the hormonal change, the puberty. They are stronger, everything. Should they be a part of biological girl sports? In response, 79% of American adults, 79% of we the people, and 67% of Democrats, registered Democrats, said they should not be allowed. Proponents of the bill argued that it was necessary to ensure fair competition, protect the integrity of women's athletics, and also for the safety of young girls playing these sports. Ask. Pam, that was acknowledged in the State of the Union. A young girl, a high school volleyball player that has had catastrophic injuries, including catastrophic brain injuries, because a transgender athlete spiked a ball into her face. Opponents, which are the Democrats, these progressive Democrats that have held on and are continuing to hold on to this issue, contended that such legislation discriminates against these transgender individuals and undermines principles of inclusivity. And it isn't just that big of a deal. Really? How would you feel when your daughter, your high school daughter's admitted into the hospital and now has irreparable brain damage because of this? At least 900 medals. They like to say that, oh, well, it's only a few transgender athletes, it's no big deal. Well, it is on the big grand scheme, because when you have these girls that are starting out in swimming at a young age and putting all their efforts, or in track and everything, and they're trying to get into medals and they're trying to get into the Olympics and they're trying to get scholarships, it's not just, oh, there's a few. No, at least 900 medals that belong to women have gone to men just over the past years of men. Oh, and most of these men have failed at the sport running against other men. They're not even the top tier of their men. So you're having someone who's placed like 280 in the country of men's swimmers, but now they're number one. When you have a long jumper, trans athlete, won the gold medal at the collegiate levels, like national championship, and his jump was 8 feet further than the second place female, that is unfair. I also challenge the Democratic leadership to state that this isn't a big issue to Peyton McNabb, that same young woman that I was talking about. And here's something interesting to show that this isn't the issue for Democrats to die on the hill on. But you know what? Continue fighting this fight. You're going to lose. Gavin Newsom, yes, Governor Gavin Newsom, who at one point was the leader of the progressive movement, the face of the progressive movement, breaks with fellow Democrats on transgender students in girls' sports, calling it a fundamental issue of fairness. So Governor Newsom started a new podcast. And he's still seen as a potential White House hopeful in 2028. His remarks were an extraordinary break from fellow Democrats and signaled a newly defensive position on the issue. Now, what's interesting is there was another individual Democrat, and I think it was in Wisconsin, Michigan, that they actually had protests against him. But Governor Gavin Newsom, embarking on his personal postmortem of the failures of his Democratic Party, suggested this week that the participation of transgender athletes in women's sports was deeply unfair. Really? So maybe this is hope. But again, is this Governor Newsom trying to show that he's moderate? He understands the people and where the issues are because he does have eyes on the White House. The comments by Mr. Newsom, who has backed LGBTQ causes for decades and was one of the first American elected officials to officiate same-sex weddings, represented a remarkable break from other top Democrats on the issue and signaled a newly defensive position. Mr. Newsom spent much of his conversation with Mr. Kirk, a very conservative individual who went around the college universities, very pro-Trump, reflecting on the myriad ways that former Vice President Kamala Harris' campaign failed to reach key voters during the 2024 election, losing ground with young people, men, and Hispanic voters. But his most significant revelation on his podcast, which was released on Thursday morning, came when Mr. Kirk pressed the California governor to agree with him that it was unfair for transgender women to compete in women's sports. I think it's an issue of fairness. I completely agree with you on that. Mr. Newsom said, it is an issue of fairness. It's deeply unfair to allow this to continue. He also acknowledged the effectiveness of Mr. Trump's signature campaign ad, which declared Kamala is for they, them, President Trump is for you. Now, he admitted that this was devastating. To quote Mr. Newsom, she didn't even react to it, which was even more devastating because they couldn't. How could the Democrats, when they are putting all of their eggs in this completely identity politics, transgender, I mean, shoving it down our throats movement? I will support somebody who is transitioning. I personally know of friends and distant family members who have children that are transitioning. Absolutely. Absolutely, I will respect it. You know what? I respect Caitlyn Jenner. And I will call her she. But I will not ever say, oh, a transgender female, someone who identifies as a female, who still has all of the twigs and berries, body parts of a male, plus the muscular, the skeletal, the strength and everything advantages, should be playing in female sports, in biological female sports. Create a separate category for these individuals. Let them compete among themselves. That is fair. But don't do it against young girls. And don't do it at the expense of their health and their safety and out of abundance of fairness. And on top of that, read the room. You have almost 80% of we the people saying we do not want this. It is an issue that needs to be stopped. But one thing for sure is, you know, shame on you, Democrats. Shame on you for wearing pink and not standing up to acknowledge this young girl. Shame on you for wearing pink and then for killing any hopes of protecting girls and girls' sports. And shame on you for trying to destroy Title IX. Destroy it and taken away. The only one who's attacking or trying to take away the rights of females, of women, are the Democrats. Yes, the abortion issue was a major thing. And you know what? Ironically, the only senator that stood up and said, okay, I want to propose a bill that allows federally that legalize abortion up to 15 weeks. And they were shot down by both sides. but it's up to the states. And abortion is still accessible in the vast majority of states. That's not the key issue. That is just one minute issue. When you are trying to strip away Title IX protections that women shall have, the right to be able to be to equal access to scholarships for sporting, for sports teams, and equal access to university, that is the issue. We the people will not stand for this. And we the people need to start making our voices heard even more so against these Democratic leaders and other leaders that will not abide by the fact and protect our daughters and our future granddaughters and our nieces. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and I will try to cool down a little bit on this issue.
To our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
Whew, welcome back. All right, let's just take a breath, or at least I do. As you can tell, I'm very impassioned about this because there was a time where women were not even allowed to have their own bank accounts or their own credit cards unless their husband signed off on it. Women weren't even allowed, if you opened up a savings account, to take withdraw that money without permission of a husband. And you want to say, oh, was that back in the Little House of the Prairie times? No, that was in the 1970s. We women did not have equal rights until the 1970s. That's only a half a century ago, 50 years ago. Let's not let it go. But turning the page. So we're going to talk about the political turbulence that Trump's address caused and the congressional reactions. So Trump's speech was his victory dance. I mean, he was having fun on it too, because at this point he knows he can say whatever. It will not matter what he says or what he accomplishes. The Democrats will never acknowledge it. And that is a sad state, if you think about it, because we really do need for a proper functioning government, collaboration, bipartisan workings together. But former President Donald Trump's recent address, has been characterized as the victory dance, showcasing his rhetorical prowess and ability to rally his base. It was pure Donald Trump, a tour de force of bold ideas, grand notions, and vitriol. It had a laser focus on familiar themes from the campaign, securing the border, which, as he jokingly stated, only, you know, Biden was saying you needed an act of Congress, you needed to do this, and it only took a new president. Well, he's right. It only took a new president. We had the lowest number of border crossings now, less than 300. Imposing tariffs, which we're still in that merry-go-round, and ending wokeness and DEI. He drew attention to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky Wednesday, stating regret over last Friday's Oval Office debacle. And that was a debacle. But maybe it was refreshing that the curtains are peeled back, because I personally, when I watched the full amount, not just the viral 10-minute clip, the full time, there was a lot of disrespect. There was a lot of disrespect shown for Zelensky and entitlement. Mr. Trump stated he was going to sign a minerals deal, and return to peace negotiations. But we will see, because Zelensky likes to play around with that. And honestly, at this point, the people of the United States are tired of funding a never-ending war in Ukraine, when we have people in North Carolina, Tennessee, and now California that are homeless, without towns, and are still living in tents. The president had some humdinger lines as in Democrats kept saying we needed new legislation to secure the border, but it turned out all that we needed was a new president. The speech appeared to catch Democratic lawmakers off guard. Observers noted that while Trump effectively communicated his agenda, Democrats struggled to present a cohesive counter-narrative, highlighting ongoing challenges within the party's strategic approach. Of course, all they can say is oligarch, 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 Nazi, 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 and taking away women's rights when, in fact, as before, they won't even stand up for biological women. The speech appeared to catch them completely in disarray. Democrats rarely, they did not applaud anything, not even to the people. I mean, you had some bipartisan worthy movement that occurred and wins, victories for the United States. It's not Trump. It's not us against them. It's we. And they couldn't even applaud that. They would have been smart to join in when Mr. Trump touched on topics that resonate with us, we the people, we the Americans, such as securing the border, having the lowest numbers of crossings ever. And why was it that they couldn't even applaud what would be a bipartisan victory? Part of the reason they didn't is the warped worldview of the party's left. Their deep personal hatred of Mr. Trump, which, by the way, before he ran for president in 2015, he was the darling of the Dems. Everybody wanted to be invited to Mar-a-Lago. Everybody wanted to be a part of Donald Trump's circle. I mean, we have great photos of Melania and Trump's wedding with the Clintons and all the top brass from the Democrats, to include the women of The View. The address also served to reinforce Trump's influence within the Republican Party, as his policy proposals received widespread support from GOP members. Now, remember, when he was first elected in 2016, he didn't know really. He was just as surprised as everybody else that he won. But the Republicans, the mainstream Republicans, were very much opposed to what he was doing, which is what gave entry to this progressivism that was the door that ended. And now we come back and it is solidly Trump's party. And before you start saying it's all the Republicans' fault, it's not. Because remember, the independents, the moderates, the people who want common sense, who are pleading for common sense, are also supportive of this. This development poses strategic challenges for the Democrats, who must navigate internal disagreements while formulating effective responses to his rhetoric. The speech's impact on public opinion and subsequent policy debates underscores the significance of effective communication in shaping political dynamics. And there was a CNN poll that showed that huge numbers of people are resonating with what he was saying. His approval ratings are increasing. Increasing. People approve of Doge. And while we're talking about decorum and statesmanship, oh, how I miss the statesmen that we used to have. House censored Representative Al Green as Democrats face fallout from the Trump protest at the State of the Union. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries warned fellow Democrats ahead of President Trump's speech, whatever you do, don't create a spectacle. Democrats then created a spectacle, and Republicans are now making them pay a political price. 4 minutes into Trump's address Tuesday, it was clear that Jeffries' guidance wasn't being heeded. Representative Al Green of Texas, Houston, Texas, stood up and shouted, "No mandate to cut Medicaid," while waving his cane at the president. After several warnings, he was then removed from the chamber. Green was censored by the Republican-led House in a 224-198 vote Thursday morning, giving Democrats the kind of political black eye their leaders were hoping to avoid. 10 Democrats joined all Republicans in backing the resolution. Green and one other Democrat vote to present. Speaker Mike Johnson had dared Democrats to join Republicans on the censure vote, calling Green's actions shameful and egregious. And he was right. It was shameful. Just as it was shameful for Marjorie Taylor Greene to act out and shout during Biden's last State of the Union. Democrats countered that Republicans had staged their own disruptions during Democratic president speeches and didn't face censure. And maybe she should have. But she didn't go up to there waving a cane at him and continuing. When she was called out, she calmed down. Censure carries no practical weight, but is the highest form of discipline by the House short of expulsion. The House Republicans are now looking into whether they will be stripping Representative Greene of his committee assignment. Representative Greene, 77 years old, is a longtime antagonist of Trump and a loud advocate for trying to impeach the president. And again, he's threatening to put forth another impeachment doctrine. We're not even 2 months into the presidency. The Democratic lawmaker who represents a Houston area district said he would have done it again. Democrats are caught between calls to fiercely fight Trump at every turn. If you watch The View, which I really don't, I just can't, or standing back and hoping Trumpism seeks under its own weight. While some Democrats say Jeffries made the right call in directing caucus members to bite their tongues, although they had their little auction paddles, which looked ridiculous, I am glad to know that they didn't bring noisemakers. Others argue that he lacked a strong strategy. Well, let's put it this way. You embarrass yourselves, Democratic leaders. You embarrass yourselves by refusing to stand up and acknowledge and show that you have human emotion when a young boy whose eyes got that big and wide when he was surprised with that Secret Service honorary position and hearing a story, or standing up for Mrs. Lakin and her daughter who were there to honor their murdered daughter. No, you'll bow for George Floyd, but you will not stand up and acknowledge and send heart warmth, regrets and condolences to a woman whose daughter fought for 13 minutes as she was being brutally raped and murdered. Or how about applauding Officer Ortiz who fought off a cartel attack? You need to reset. You need to figure out who you are. Oh, and by the way, having 22 Democrat leaders doing exactly the same video with the same script that was professionally done at the Democratic National Building or what have you, and trying to say, well, this shit ain't real, and or another Texas representative calling out, trying to be all, I don't know, I think she thinks she's a rap star and saying, like, Trump is a hoe. That's not representative. That is not what it's doing. And by the way, it's turning off the Gen Zs because they don't want to see people acting like that. They want to see leadership and statesmanship. And when you have fellow Democrats, especially Governor Newsom calling you out, there's a problem. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to talk about the global impacts of Trump's policies and on Europe.
Getting back to our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
Okay, let's go to world news. And as anyone who is picking up X, checking out X, TikTok, the news, what have you, tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. The trade wars are on. You have, I don't know what to call him, but I guess Trudeau, who resigned as prime minister, but is still acting prime minister, saying that we will boo the American anthem and we are going to fight terrorists with terrorists. If you, I personally don't know much about terrorists, but I know one thing. If we're being charged terrorists by foreign countries, why can't we do the equal amount? But let's get on the roller coaster. Make sure your bars are secure and let's hit it. So Trump, who was rolling out 25% tariffs against Canada products and Mexican products, well, Mexico has a big sigh of relief and breathes easy for at least a month. Trump provided a reprieve on Mexico. After President Claudia Sheinbaum of Mexico spoke with President Trump about his 25% tariff on exports from her country, he announced he would delay it until April 2nd. The Trump administration's shift on these policies have once again sent economic shockwaves through global markets, particularly in Mexico and other key trade partners, such as Canada. Recent tariff hikes on Mexican goods have created uncertainty for businesses on both sides of the border, impacting industries ranging from agriculture to automotive manufacturing. Mexican officials have voiced concerns over the unpredictability of U.S. trade policies, arguing that such volatility threatens supply chains and investor confidence. On Thursday, President Sheinbaum of Mexico spoke with Trump in a last-ditch attempt to avert the 25% tariff that Mr. Trump imposed this week on her country's exports, which would have devastated its economy. For now, it appears it worked. In a news conference on Thursday, President Sheinbaum says she has shared with President Trump examples of what the government had accomplished, including data that showed a decrease of more than 40% in the amount of fentanyl seized by U.S. Customs and Border Protection at the border. On social media, after the two leaders' call, Mr. Trump announced that he would give Mexico another month, at least until April 2nd. But it was more to allow the U.S. auto industry to be able to gauge and prepare itself for the April 2nd tariffs that would go into effect across the board on all countries. The tariffs, according to the banks and business leaders, could cause American companies that make products in Mexico to leave the country, in line with Trump's stated goal of pressuring those manufacturers to relocate to the United States, which was effective in his first term. The tariffs could lead to the loss of tens of thousands of Mexican jobs and a contraction of gross domestic product of more than 2%. Now, what's interesting is, so here in Florida, we still have a huge agricultural aspect to our economy. The citrus, tomato farming, strawberries. Yes, the strawberry season, folks from Florida. And the Senate president, the state Senate leader, was asked what his thoughts were, how this would impact the tariffs would against Canada, which is threatening to no longer import goods from U.S. And in fact, I think in certain areas they're unstocking, even though they already purchased this. Think about that. They already purchased all these goods. They're taking them off, like the Kentucky bourbons and stuff, off their shelves. He asked how this would affect the agricultural industry, especially in Florida, which is still, you know, a good percentage of our economic basis is off of that. And he stated that as a farmer, as a citrus grower and tomato farmer, that and being in communication with the farmers of America, that this actually potentially could help us, benefit us. So the real issue here is, first of all, is Trump utilizing the threat of tariffs to close the border, to get Canada and Mexico to be stronger on the cartels, to stop the flow of fentanyl, things like that? Trudeau saying, well, it wasn't that much. Yeah, the amount that was taken and seized by Border Patrol from the Canadian border in 2024 would be the equivalent of to kill 10 million Americans. So that is a lot. Now, is that, but also, is it fair? It's about abundance of fairness. Because if we are getting taxed, if we have tariffs for our exports in other countries, then why is it that we can't do the same? When we are running $80 billion deficit problems on $80 billion deficit, trade deficit, just on Canada's side alone. Now, on other worldviews, Europe raises to craft a Trump-era plan for Ukrainian defense. And again, this is all because of that debacle that it was, embarrassing showdown and also perceived threat that occurred on Friday. European Union leaders are confronting one of the biggest challenges in the bloc's history as an aggressive Russia looms to the east and American support wavers from the west. On Thursday, they pledged to rise to the challenge. Leaders gathered at a specially convened meeting in Brussels to discuss how to bolster both Europe's own defenses and its support for Ukraine amid enormously high stakes. They must figure out how to accomplish these aims without further alienating their tempestuous allies in Washington. That would be us. At the same time, they are struggling to keep the united front, even among their own member countries, as Hungary strikes a critical note toward Ukraine. As Trump's foreign policy approach continues to reshape global alliances, European leaders are scrambling to develop a comprehensive strategy for Ukraine and regional defense. Trump's emphasis on reducing American military commitments in Europe has prompted EU nations to consider their reliance on U.S. support. This shift comes at a critical time as Ukraine remains locked in conflict and NATO faces questions about its long-term stability. European leaders, particularly Germany and France, have pushed for increased military spending and strategic autonomy. Some have even proposed creating an independent European defense initiative to ensure security without over-reliance on U.S. intervention. The European Union is also exploring alternative ways to support Ukraine, including expanding financial aid and coordinating weapons deliveries outside traditional NATO channels. Trump's transactional approach to alliances, demanding the European nations contribute more to their own defense, has led to frustration among EU policymakers. While some European nations have responded by ramping up defense budgets, others remain hesitant, fearing that a rapid shift away from U.S. security guarantees could leave them vulnerable. This internal divide complicates efforts to present a united front against Russian aggression. Meanwhile, Ukraine continues to seek assurances from both the U.S. and Europe regarding long-term military and economic support. Now, here's the thing. Zelensky was basically counseled by the Prime Minister of Great Britain and the President Macron of France to say, agree, just go in there. It was a first step. Sign the agreement with the mineral rights. Because honestly, Trump does have a point. We will be, with that mineral rights there, we will be investing in Ukraine. We will have a presence in Ukraine, and it does provide a security, because if there's any aggression of Russia towards that and it affects U.S. interests, that is a whole new ball of wax, right? Also, there is an agreement that says NATO will not go and include the countries around the border. Well, they've done Poland. They have Hungary. They're happy, but there's that issue as well. But here's the bigger and more interesting point. And this is why people in the Americas are, the United States, are getting frustrated. We had major devastating storms last year. We had a hurricane, Hurricane Helene, that wiped out towns, wiped out homes in not just Florida, which is a coastal state. We're talking up in the mountains where they don't have hurricanes. You had up until January 20th of the inauguration, people living in tents, freezing, not having food, FEMA telling them they don't have enough money to provide them. But yet Blinken goes on TV, not thinking about the optics, not thinking about how does this look to the very people that you're supposed to be representing or protecting, and saying, oh, we're going to send another $170 million to Ukraine, when you have people that are trying to figure out, what are we going to do? How are we going to feed our children? the last administration was abysmal, but the last administration also had problems with Zelensky because Zelensky is acting as an entitled little biatch. Because I would like to know, and I will, you know what, I'm going to start looking into this. What was Zelensky's net worth prior to becoming president as an actor doing a belly dance? Because now he has a wife that's spending $1 million whenever she goes to New York, buying expensive cars. What happened with all of the money? They can't even account for half. They're saying they only received $170 billion in aid and arms when we're saying we sent almost $400 billion. There has to be accountability. There needs to be an audit. Oh, and it goes back to Doge. Because remember, the Democrats are saying, oh, of course we should be, you know, there's going to be fraud and we should stop it. But we don't want anybody doing accounting. But yet you and I, folks, if we do anything that the IRS smells a little fishy, they will do a full-on audit. And by the way, they will go back as far as they can if they suspect fraud. But yet we expect to be doling it out. We are a country. We are the United States of America. We are not the United Bank of America. And we need to stop acting like that. And we need our constituents or our elected officials to stop acting like that. But we also need the European Union to step up. Condoleezza Rice even stated, just meet what you agreed to do, the percentage of your GDP. I am Alina Gonzalez-Dockery. Thank you for joining me on this episode of We the People. I had so much fun, and I appreciate you giving me this floor. And tune back in next week as we explore more issues and talk about more political news that we the people are either on board with or just plain old fed up. You all have a great weekend.